Reading from Bridge of Birds, a novel of an ancient China that never was, by Barry Hugert. Chapter 16, Children's Games. The monastery was hushed, and the tension was such that the warm air crackled as though touched by invisible lightning. The color of the liquid in the alchemist's vial had changed from saffron to black, and the essence was almost ready. Li Kao lifted the vial from the pan of boiling water and removed the stopper, and when he and the abbot emerged from the cloud of steam, they both appeared to have been reborn, with rosy cheeks and sparkling eyes, and the ginseng aroma was so strong that my heart began to pound furiously. I remembered that even the most skeptical physicians admitted that ginseng could have an astounding effect upon the cardiovascular system, and my eyes were wide with hope as the abbot and Master Li moved down the line of beds, three drops upon each tongue, repeated three times. The parents held their breaths. The effect of the legs of the great root of power was quite extraordinary. The pale faces of the children flushed, and the heartbeats strengthened, and the covers lifted with deep, easy breathing. And then the parents cried out in joy as child after child sat up and opened his eyes. They began to laugh and giggle, and then all the boys began to shake their shoulders up and down and make quick snatching gestures. When the girls began to make swooping pulling gestures, I realized with a sudden shock of recognition that I was watching a ritual that I had performed at least 100 times myself. Li Kao strode up to Bone Helmet and waved a hand in front of her face. Her wide, bright eyes never moved. He snarled and snatched a candle from a holder and lit it, but when he thrust it forward so that it was almost touching her nose, the pupils of her eyes did not constrict. The abbot grabbed a boy called Monkey and shook him vigorously and got no reaction whatsoever. The children of Khufu continued to laugh and giggle and swoop and shake and snatch, completely unaware of their surroundings. They had awakened, but into a world of their own. Bone Helmet suddenly stopped her swooping, pulling gestures and sat silently, with the happy smile still on her face. Girl after girl and a few boys followed her example. Finally, only Fang's fawn continued her gestures, and the boys redoubled their efforts, and at last Fawn stopped and sat still. The children made a muffled sound that might have been a cheer, and then all of them, except Fawn and Little Hong, closed their eyes tightly. Little Hong's lips began to move slowly and rhythmically, and the others started giggling again and began feeling the air with their fingers, with their eyes still closed. Only Fawn sat as before, completely still and silent. I said that I recognized the ritual, and what happened next was totally unexpected. All the children suddenly stopped feeling the air, and all the heads jerked to the east. They were still and intent, and I sensed that they were listening to a sound that only they could hear. Bone Helmet parted her lips when her small, thin voice lifted through the hush of the monastery. Every one of us, including Master Li, who was an authority on the folklore of every corner of China, jerked our heads toward the windows and stared with wide eyes at the distant, looming outline of Dragon's Pillow.
"Jade plate," she whispered.
6, 8,
whispered Little Hong.
"Fire that burns hot," Monkey whispered.
"Night that is not," whispered Wang number 3.
"Fire that burns cold," all the boys said together.
"First silver, then gold," all the girls said together.
Little Hong turned back and resumed
moving his lips rhythmically, and the animation returned tenfold as the others resumed groping through the air with their fingers. Only Fang's fawn continued to sit silently. The giggles and laughter grew louder, and they chanted happily over and over, "Jade plate 6-8, fire that burns hot, night that is not, fire that burns cold, first silver, then gold." Monkey lifted his right arm and began to swing it back and forth through the air. One of his fingers touched Fawn's forehead, and instantly Little Hong stopped moving his lips. The others opened their eyes and began to cheer, and a wide, happy smile spread over Fawn's face. She yawned drowsily, her eyes closed. Fawn sank back upon her bed, and child after child followed her example, and the weeping of parents again filled the monastery of Khufu as the children once more lay as still as death. The legs of power had almost done it, but those two tiny tendrils could not carry the children to safety. The abbot took the arms of Li Kao and myself and led us into his study and slammed the door upon the sounds of grief. His wrinkles and worries had returned, and his hands were shaking, and he took a deep breath and turned to Master Li.
"Will you continue?" he asked quietly. "Well, I don't seem to have anything else to do at the moment," Master Li said with a shrug of his shoulders. Then he smiled wryly. "No, the truth is that I'm becoming fascinated with this weird case, and if somebody tries to pull me off it, I will scream like a baby who has been robbed of a bright, shiny new toy. It would help if I could figure out what those children were doing in there."
"They were playing the hopping hide-and-seek game," I said.
"The what?"
"The hopping hide-and-seek game," said the abbot. The monastery supported itself by manufacturing a very good brand of wine, although the abbot and the bonzes were forbidden to touch it themselves, and he poured cups for Li Kao and me.
"It's a sex and courtship game, and it's been played by the children of Khufu for as long as anyone can remember," the abbot explained. "The object is to get possession of the girl's red hair ribbons. A large circle is drawn upon the ground, or perhaps natural barriers are used. The boys try to snatch the ribbons from the girls, but they must hop on one leg, which is what they were doing when their shoulders shook up and down. The girls try to trip the boys with the ribbons, thus the swooping, pulling gestures. A boy who is tripped becomes the girl's prisoner and drops out of the game, and a girl who loses her red hair ribbon becomes the boy's prisoner and drops out of the game." Li Kao was far more interested than I would have expected.
"Considering the boy's one-legged handicap, the girls should win easily," he said.
"They should, except that they instinctively know that the best way to begin a long campaign in the battle of the sexes is to surrender. And the real point of the game is that there is a great deal of giggling and grappling and feeling of bodies," the abbot said dryly. "Thus, it's longevity. Eventually, only one girl will be left, and when she is captured, she becomes the queen, and the boy who gets her ribbon becomes the king. In this case, it was Fang's fawn and Little Hong. The other children put on blindfolds. The king hides the queen somewhere inside the circle, and the others must try to find her by touch. This leads to more giggling and grappling and feeling of bodies, but there is a time limit. When Little Hong moved his lips, he was slowly counting to 49.
"Is the count ever changed?" Master Li asked.
"No, sir," I said.
"Or do they have formal titles, such as King of X and Queen of Y?"
"No, sir," I said.
"The peculiar thing," said the abbot, "was that suddenly they broke off and listened, and then they repeated that ancient nonsense rhyme.
that is said to have come from Dragon's Pillow. That is not part of the hopping hide-and-seek game."
Li Cao helped himself to more wine, and then he walked to the window and gazed out at the strange stretch of wall where the ghost of Wan was said to keep watch.
"Yet, when they repeated that rhyme, they were able to find the queen," he said thoughtfully.
"Yes, sir," I said. "Monkey touched fawn before the count reached 49, and she smiled because she had won the game."
Li Cao swallowed his wine in a gulp and turned back to the room.
"Those children were completely unconscious. Then they had one tiny taste of the great root. And how did they react? Every single one of them instantly started playing the hopping hide-and-seek game, and every single one of them recited a nonsense rhyme that children from this village had first heard many centuries ago at Dragon's Pillow. I am beginning to suspect that the simple quest for a ginseng root is wrapped in more riddles than that mysterious mountain cavern of winds where the white serpent crushes heroes in the cold coils of enigmas. And while I am probably hallucinating, I am willing to bet that the ghost of a murdered maiden fits in here somewhere."
He turned to the abbot.
"Reverend sir, in your studies of myth and folklore, have you ever encountered a ghostly handmaiden who pleads that birds must fly?"
The abbot shook his head negatively.
"Or ghosts who beg people to exchange things for feathers? Possibly things like this."
He took the tiny flute from his smuggler's belt. The abbot studied it with interest, but without recognition. And Li Cao sighed and lifted it to his lips and blew gently into the mouthpiece.
Then he hurled the flute to the floor, and all three of us jumped back and stared at it as one might view a cobra. No flute sound came from that incredible thing. Instead, we heard an old woman whose voice was so rich and warm that she might have been the grandmother of the entire human race. "Aye, aye, come closer, my children. Spread ears like elephants, and I will tell you the tale of a girl named Beauty, and of her wicked stepmother, and her good fairy godmother, and of the magic fishbone, and the carriage, and the little slipper that fell from Beauty's foot and led her to a handsome prince."
Li Cao lunged. He grabbed the flute and covered the first of four tiny finger holes, and the voice stopped abruptly. He covered the second finger hole and blew lightly into the mouthpiece.
"Aye, aye, come closer, my children. Spread ears like elephants, and I will tell you the tale of the old woman and her little boy, and of the cow and the corn and the peddler, and of the beanstalk that grew to the clouds, and what happened when the little boy climbed it into a world of wonders."
Li Cao tried the other finger holes, and each one produced a tale that had been delighting Chinese children for at least 2,000 years, and which have even spread to the barbarian tribes. He stopped the last tale and glowered at the marvelous thing.
"Master Li, we could exchange that flute for 10,000 tons of feathers," I whispered.
"With the island of Taiwan tossed in for good measure," the abbot said shakily.
Master Li looked from the flute to the infirmary where the children lay, and back to the flute.
"That does it," he snarled. "Ox, we have an evil duke who reads minds and laughs at axes. Treasure troves that are hidden in labyrinths that are supposedly guarded by monsters. Flutes that tell fairy tales. An incomprehensible ghost who might have come from one. An ancient children's game and a ghostly message from Dragon's Pillow.
If you're wondering about the wicked stepmother, just wait, because she's bound to turn up."
He replaced the flute in his belt and shook a finger in front of my nose.
"Nothing on the face of this earth, and I do mean nothing, is half so dangerous as a children's story that happens to be real, and you and I are wandering blindfolded through a myth devised by a maniac. Mark my words," he shouted angrily, "if the key rabbit can slip us into another one of the Duke's treasure troves, we will most certainly shake hands with a 200-foot armor-plated winged water moccasin that can hit the eye of a gnat with a spit of venom from 20 miles away, and that can only be slain by a hero who was born inside a knitting needle during a total eclipse of the moon on the 31st day of February."
I flushed and looked down at my toes. "If it's all right with you, I'd rather worry about real heads splashing into real basins filled with real blood," I said meekly.
"You have a point," he sighed.
Master Lee looked wryly at the abbot and shrugged his shoulders.
"The supernatural can be very annoying until one finds the key that transforms it into science," he observed mildly. "I'm probably imagining complications that don't exist. Come on, Ox, let's go out and get killed."
The Duke of Chin had left on his annual tax trip with the Key Rabbit and Lotus Cloud, and we caught up with them in Chu Yen. Unfortunately, the Key Rabbit's apartment was high in an unclimbable tower in the palace of the Duke's provincial governor. There were no vines to cling to, and no foot or handholds, and every entrance was guarded by soldiers. Master Lee did not appear to be greatly disturbed.
"Ox, I learned a valuable lesson in natural history when I was exiled to Serendip," he said. "When a foraging ant discovers something of value, it grabs a sample and dashes back to the colony screaming, 'Awake, arise, beat the drum, sound general quarters. I have discovered wealth beyond the dreams of avarice.' Then the whole colony follows the ant back to the treasure. But are they content to take what they see? Not if it is a trail of something. Ants that find trails of something they like will follow those trails to the source, even if it means crossing half of the world. Do you see the significance of that?"
"No, sir," I said. "You will," said Master Lee. In the marketplace, he bought a large jar of honey and a box that contained a colony of ants. Then he bribed a maid to bring a message to Lotus Cloud, and on the first cloudy night, we scaled the outer walls of the governor's palace, slipped past the guards, and made our way to the tower. I hooted 3 times like an owl. Lotus Cloud, who was enjoying the game immensely, opened her window and poured the jar of honey that the maid had brought down the wall. And when the thick, sweet trickle reached us, Li Kao opened the box and released the ants. They plunged into the honey with bugling squeals of delight, discovered that it was a trail, and started to climb. The last ant was the biggest, and it was towing a gauze thread that was lighter than a feather. It scrambled over Lotus Cloud's windowsill, and she detached the thread and tugged 3 times. Li Kao tied a fine length of string to his end of the thread and tugged back, and Lotus Cloud began pulling it up. Then came a cord tied to the end of the string, and a rope tied to the end of the cord, and Lotus Cloud tied her end of the rope to something sturdy inside the apartment. Li Kao hopped upon my back, and in a matter of minutes, I had climbed an unclimbable wall and flopped over the windowsill.
"Boopsie!"
Lotus Cloud squealed happily. I dumped my pearls and jade at her feet.
"Do I have a story to tell you?" I panted.
later," Li Kao said warningly. Footsteps were approaching the door. I took Master Li on my back and swung back out the window, and then I clung to the rope and lifted my eyes back up over the windowsill. A pasty-faced lout crashed through the door, staggered across the room, dumped an armload of pearls and jade on top of my pearls and jade, fell to his knees, wrapped his arms around Lotus Cloud's legs, and buried his face against her thighs.
"My surname is Jia, and my personal name is Chen, and it is my unhappy lot to serve in this miserable rat hole as the Duke's provincial governor. And I have worshipped you ever since you grinned at me in the garden this morning," he moaned.
Lotus Cloud laughed happily. Her fingers played with his hair.
"I shall call you Woofy," she said. I sighed and sadly climbed back down the wall.
"Woofy," said Master Li,
"Ox, far be it from me to interfere with your affairs, but there would appear to be certain drawbacks in forming a close relationship with Lotus Cloud."
"I love her as much as ever," I sighed. He patted my shoulder comfortingly.
"At least you will never be lonely," he said. "You and her other admirers can hold annual conventions. Perhaps the Imperial Elephant Stables might be large enough for the purpose. And if not, you can rent an impoverished province. I hear that the grain harvest in Hua has been miserable this year, and the peasants should be delighted to entertain 60,000 or 70,000 visitors with money in their pockets. Although I am talking nonsense, since every one of you will be bankrupt."
"Great heavens!" the lout yelled above us. "There is a rope tied to your bed."
"Rope? What rope?" said Lotus Cloud. The pasty face peered over the windowsill, and, under the circumstances, there was little that we could do except smile in a friendly fashion and wave. The provincial governor pointed down at us and squawked,
"Burglars! Fear not, my beloved! I have my trusty sword!"
And then the bastard cut the rope. We had ample time to survey the landscape as we plunged toward the courtyard. In another part of the palace, a banquet was breaking up, and the departing guests were climbing into carriages and sedan chairs. We were plunging straight toward one of the latter, and we'd landed upon the vast belly of an enormously fat fellow. I bounced off to the cobblestones, but Li Kao was much lighter, and he continued to bounce up and down like a ball while the fat fellow's dinner sprayed into the air. Pigeon egg soup with lotus roots and dumplings and crushed pine kernels was followed by duck's tongues cooked in sesame oil with mushrooms and bamboo shoots, which were followed by the ducks themselves, at least three, which had been stuffed with shellfish and steamed inside a cover of hardened bean curd, which were followed by spider crabs, simmered in sweet white wine, which were followed by lamb kidneys sautéed with minced walnuts, which were followed by honey cakes, which were followed by candied fruits, which were followed by sweetmeats, which were followed by green tea, which was followed by plum wine, which was followed by daffodil digestive tonic, which was followed by seven spirits regulating tonic, which was followed by fragrant fire vitality tonic, which was followed by hiccups, which were followed by a pair of hands that clamped around Li Kao's throat.
"What have you done with my case of compasses?" screamed our porcupine merchant.